Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
There are aliens among us, and because we're human, we like to rank them. It's a popularity contest. Everything's a popularity contest, especially when it comes to Star Trek. So we're going to be looking at our favorite aliens. Star Trek Weekly starts now.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
And yes, this is, of course, alien music from far beyond our galaxy. Across the Universe is the only place that's... Oh, that's a song I should have used. Across the Universe by the Beatles. In the moment, we really weren't sure what to work, and I was shamed for not knowing what this was initially. But once you get to this part, apparently the song is about aliens. In any case... Welcome to Star Trek Weekly. I'm Christian Blatt. Joined as always, Carrie Lane.
Hey, how's it going?
And of course, Frank Moran.
Hey, guys.
So we're going to do a little list this week of, favorite aliens. It kind of came from a suggestion in some of the comments on YouTube. So if you have ideas for these sort of lists or kind of episodes, please let us know. And we're going to just dive right into it. We're going to go down the line. We have three favorites, and we each have an honorable mention. So, Frank, whom is first on your list?
I went with a character that I always enjoyed seeing anytime she popped up on the Next Generation episodes. And I felt like a character that was set up to do for a lot of potential and just had never really got a chance to execute it. And that was Ensign Ro Laren, first seen on the... Star Trek The Next Generation with Ensign Ro, played by Michelle Forbes. Really enjoyed her performance because it was definitely, you felt like it was a character brought in to really just butt heads against the rest of the crew, which, you know, up to that point pretty much had been like, hey, we're all a bunch of friends and we really get along pretty well and we're cruising through the galaxy. Now we put somebody in there that doesn't necessarily ascribe to those same viewpoints and opinions as the rest of the Starfleet command crew. So it was cool. I like Sarah. She was, you know, kind of a little more regular in fifth season and then sporadically in the sixth and seventh.
Yeah, and then I do remember the advent of Ensign Ro, and it was one of those things that happens a lot on a show like that. When she's introduced, you're like, wait, who's this? Like, I don't know her. Why am I being treated like I know her? But it's so interesting what you said about the fact that she was set up and they were building up a really good character. And I don't think that they did her a disservice, but at the same time, you felt like there was more that we could have gotten out of her. And that is exactly what happened with her character on Homicide. She was a medical examiner. Last name was Cox. Let's see. Juliana Cox. And they realized that they made her a medical examiner, so there's only so much she could do. And they said they wish they had made her a cop. Because then, you know, you do have as much to do as everybody else. So she was only on for a couple seasons, and I just was like, oh, she's a great character. And she was also on Rescue Me. I mean, she works very consistently. But Ensign Ro only featured on Star Trek Next Generation. Yeah. She didn't make the transitions to the movies, unfortunately.
She was originally, the plan for when they started Deep Space Nine, supposed to be where Kira Nerys ended up being. It was originally designed that she was going to be a carryover character to that. But Michelle Forbes passed on it. She had other stuff going on.
Possibly Homicide.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like that was also another reason maybe she didn't get as much use as either is because she wasn't signed exclusively to Star Trek. She wasn't signed on as a new permanent cast member.
Right.
So, you know, she's exploring other opportunities. And so I think it maybe just became tougher and tougher for them to cycle her in until the point where she said, no, I'm going to pursue other options. And so we got Kira Nerys, which is fine. Kira Nerys is
a great character. Yeah. I did consider putting her on my list. Not the Mirror Universe version, because I'd seen a little too much of her. In what was that, just last week?
Yeah.
So I'd seen a little too much of her. But I was thinking of putting, you know, the regular version of Kira.
And it all ends where, if you at least read the Deep Space Nine novels, it does turn around eventually, because it continues past where the series ends and continues on. And then Rol Lehren ends up taking command over Deep Space Nine. So,
well, look at that.
At least in the novels, you know, she's a mainstay and part of the Deep Space Nine universe. So,
well, I think that's a solid choice, and it's you know, it's not like a super like deep dive of a character, but it's not somebody that immediately comes to mind. It was not someone that I considered, but I when I saw your list, I'm like, I'm glad she's on there.
Yeah, it's just a character, and I feel like this is like a character. Anytime that it pops up, you're like, yeah, I'm jazzed to see what this character does in this episode.
Yeah. All right, well, Carrie, what was your number three selection?
Well, I would also start with, I didn't have as many to choose from, because I was like, okay, let's just
You're
go from
newer
watch shows
to it.
And
but
movies.
But I find this choice fascinating.
I liked this one. This is Nancy, or the Salt Creature.
From The Man Trap.
Yes, from technically episode one, because it's not really the pilot.
It's air date episode one, right?
But I mean, on Netflix, it's episode
production two. It's not production
one.
Order. Yeah, but exactly, yes.
But it's the first episode with our, like, our crew that is the classic crew. Anyway, I like this character, and because we get the shape-shifting, which was fun, slash, like, the illusion, the visual illusion. I think it's actually more an illusion than shape-shifting. And it was just kind of this nice mystery for the episode, because you're like, what's going on? Like, who's killing these people? And it's like sucking the salt out of them. And then you find out it's this crazy creature that's like the last of its kind. And is it really being bad, or is it just trying to survive? And too bad they couldn't communicate and be like, hey, we could just give you salt. But, you know, like,
yeah, we do have salt. Yeah, we have lots of it.
We have salt. There's like salt mines. Those exist. So I thought that was interesting, and we were kind of talking about how the aliens that kind of stood out are ones that we got more character development, so I like that this was a character who was present the entire episode, though as the creature, you only really saw that at the end. So you saw Nancy the rest of the time.
Sure. As a creature, it is something that I definitely remember seeing when I was probably too young to see it, because even looking at it now, I'm like, oh, I can't look. It's funny, because it's not the most advanced creature that they had.
Ugly,
it's not the
and
scariest.
Yeah.
I think the Gorn's probably scarier. But by the way, considered putting Gorn on the list, but I ultimately passed on it. Yeah, I think this is great. So there's two things that you said about this choice that I find interesting, because it relates to mine. One, a changeling. Interestingly mm-hmm. enough. And two, the character development conversation we had beforehand. The choices that I have are characters who we really got to know. And in the case of my number three, Odo, we got to know him through seven seasons of Deep Space Nine. Because the show was on so long, you really got to know him. And he was indeed a changeling and the chief of security.
I was wondering what he was.
Yes, and in the your only real exposure to him is in the Mirror Universe, where he basically ran the mines. Then you see him in, but he's barely in the other episodes.
Yeah.
So that's the main exposure that you had to him was in that episode of Deep Space Nine. And it's interesting because that's the thing about the fact that the series goes on so long. You get to know, you know, about the founders, and you know, he was really fond of fond of humans, you know, which oftentimes the aliens that you meet are not particularly fond of humans, but the ones that we really get to know tend to be. And I think that it was just such a unique character. And I think when I started watching, you know, when Deep Space Nine premiered, I don't think he was my favorite in the pilot. And, you know, we've talked in passing, the actor Rene Auberjonois.
Love his voice.
His voice is amazing.
That stood out.
And he was also on the sitcom Benson, which is really how I knew him. So it's not like I was quick to think like, oh my God, the guy from Benson is on this. He's gonna really be my favorite. I don't know, he just was a very likable, sympathetic character. And, you know, he's got sort of a sort of a data quality where he's learning things. You know, it's a lot of like, I want to know more about your human ways. And Spock has that to some extent, too. So I think that it has a lot to do. And look, I think that the I think that Rene Auberjonois has a lot to do with why I like the character. I think that he was able to give it a little bit more range than possibly some of the others. I considered putting a Ferengi on here, and I think Quark is probably the best known Ferengi. And then I thought about it, and we talked about this. They're really two one note. I think Quark had to be a little bit less rough around the edges because we were going to see him every week, you know, and because of that setting. And I ultimately opted for no Ferengis, spoiler alert. But I do sort of like, I mention it here because I liked sort of the back and forth between Quark and Odo. And Frank, you cringed at the idea that I might have picked a Ferengi.
As we talked about last week, I just never really just could really gel with them. Anytime they came out and it was a Ferengi-centric episode, it was always like, I will watch it because I am a fan of the series, but I'm not like super psyched about that kind of in-depth focus. What I did like about Odo, though, is just that, I mean, he starts off as the last of his kind, and they kind of, as they build throughout the series, that, oh no, we find out several twists and turns about, no, he indeed is not the last of his kind. Through the wormhole, we do find out where the rest of his kind is. So they end up being the heads of the big bad that ends up taking a lot of the majority of the back half of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, which oftentimes whenever we meet anyone as the last of their kind, we usually find another of their kind. You know, I'm not
except the salt creature.
Right, that's a great point. But I think, you know, and that's not a Star Trek specific thing. That's just in anything. You're like, I'm the last one, you know. And it's like, well, you know, there's
are you
more.
Sure?
Yeah. It's like, have you looked hard enough?
Yeah.
I think that actually was able to help sort of the depth of the character. I think the fact that he went from thinking he was the last one to not, to then, you know, not meshing well with the rest. You know, he was still essentially alone. So I huge Odo fan. I would like to see him again, but I feel like at this point actors get too old, and I don't know. It shouldn't take too much for us to see Odo. Maybe we'll see more of his race on Discovery in some way. You know, maybe something like that, because it is in the past. You
true.
Know?
I mean, I guess the one thing with being a changeling is that, I mean, even though this is pretty much his base form, you could say if you wanted to go something in the future, set past the end of Deep Space Nine, right, you could have got more refined with this technique, and you could easily have some other actor kind of take over. It wouldn't be Renee, but
he could explain why he looks a little different. Now, of course, as we've established, we will never get any stories that take place after Space Nine.
No, there you go.
It's just the book is apparently like sealed shut. What were you going
to
say, Karen?
I was going to say I haven't gotten to him yet. So is this his normal base form? And then
so his normal form is liquid, and this is the humanoid form that he was able to come closest to replicating. Like he. You know, you can look at it. It's not really what a human entirely looks like, but it was a pretty close approximation.
Well,
and I think when he gets a little bit more advanced, he would be able to, you know, say, look, you know, as detailed as Dr. Bashir, although I don't know why you would want such a thing. But
say more copies but, rather than create a...
Yeah, it's just to make people more comfortable, make humans more comfortable. I mean, his typical state, I believe he'd be in a bucket. You know, so it's, but this is kind of, this is how we know him. And there's a point where he has, a point in the series where he has trouble shape-shifting, and I think he has trouble keeping his face together a little bit, as I remember. It's sort of a vague recollection, but.
Are you happy with the way that they kind of left him at the end of Deep Space Nine?
This puts me on the spot because I'm trying to remember how it ended with him.
Because I know that, you know, he had kind of started some kind of relationship with Kira.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yes. I think I like that sort of thing, you know, where they get to, you know, and that's what happens when you're on the show that long, on a show that long. You just start to, you know, they got to like, what else can we do with them? And, I would like to have seen more. I mean, it's an interesting thing with Deep Space Nine because Deep Space Nine was on so long, you really, and you know, the majority of really, except for Jadzia Dax, everybody was there from the beginning to the end. And so you really got that sort of thing. And at some point it's like, well, why can't Odo find love? You know? So, I'd have to, It's funny because when we were going through the Mirror Universe episodes, I was looking at that final season, and I'm like, oh, I know I watched this, but man, I don't really remember these descriptions, you know. And as much as I'd love to revisit them, I find it difficult to imagine finding time for a rewatch of Deep Space Nine. But like I say, with all of this, I'm just hoping that my son, who's only 2.5, likes Star Trek enough that it's like, would you like to watch 780 episodes with Daddy and some movies, some of which are good? And by the way, if you're in the chat right now, please let us know if you have any favorite aliens. You can go ahead and rank your three. And if you're watching after the fact, just leave your comments there as well, and we will read them back in a future episode. So now we have gone through number three, and we start our number two with Frank.
You know, I had to go with the Q. You know, I guess out of my kind of qualifications that I felt like I just couldn't do one that a character that an alien that had been in just one episode. That had been kind of, you know, what are they, just like the alien of the week. I feel like that just wasn't enough for me. I feel like I needed to see them at least in multiple appearances to be able to build an anticipation or at least an enjoyment of them. That whenever they came on, I was like, yeah, this is a character that I really resonate with or I enjoy watching. And Q was one of those. I mean, I know that Christian and I may be on different sides of the spectrum when it comes to Q and his place in the Star Trek universe.
So what I will always say about Q is that John DeLancey did an amazing job with the character. I love his portrayal of the character. I think that there are stories where the character worked well. I actually don't mind him so much in Encounter at Farpoint, which is the premiere of Next Generation. It got a little too jokey, and my problem is always the magic. Just he could do anything, and that's what bothers me about him.
Maybe he's a super species.
Well, see, that's a kind of explanation that would help, but that's not really the explanation that we got. Mm. And I definitely, as I've joked around about, I don't like when we have other Q, especially Corbin Burnson. Great on L.A. Law. Okay, yeah. Good on L.A. Law. Great in Major League. But, that's when it started to bother me. But I think that it's just for me personally. Magic works well in Star Wars. I feel like magic doesn't work in Star Trek. But I do think that some of the Q episodes are better than the others. And I think at some point we're going to explore Q a little bit more carefully. And we'll rewatch all of them. And now my recollection is one episode of Voyager, one episode of Deep Space Nine, but he might actually be in more, and let's see. But did you, when you were researching Q, did you find out how many episodes he was on?
I did not look for the final.
That's right. I'll see if I can tally it up.
There you go. We got three, four, five. Cupid. Who can forget Cupid there?
Oh, Cupid.
Yes. Yeah. We got Vash and Picard. Remember Vash, everybody. Probably my favorite Q appearance was Tapestry, where he goes back and in terms of how Jean-Luc Picard ended up having the need to get a new heart.
That is a great episode. That's a great story, and that's actually, you know, that's kind of in It's a Wonderful Life / Christmas Carol kind of episode. Like here's what your life would have been like, and that is actually, you know, kind of an instance where the magic, I think, made sense. Is like, oh, you want to see an alternate reality? I can do that. Sure, you know. But if I have to pick a favorite Q, it's probably that one, because the Q-ness is not distracting from the story.
I like it more when it's like you're saying, It's a Wonderful Life, or even if he's a little bit more antagonistic, when he basically pushes them to meet the Borg way sooner than they were ever supposed to. But I enjoy less of it, like his encounter at Farpoint. It's probably my least favorite Q.
Especially with that headgear.
Yes, that's just not a great look or anything for him. But once they dialed that back, that's why I wasn't like for All Good Things. I wasn't particularly that excited for him to kind of reprise that look as Picard bounced across the timelines of his life. But so that's my least favorite. But when he gets in the mix and he's more just sitting there, maybe in a Starfleet uniform, kind of goofing around and messing around and antagonizing the crew, that's probably where I enjoy Q the most. And plus, he's got several novels as well.
I was just about to ask, because I know that there are novels. Did you enjoy the novels?
Yes, as I mentioned before, Q Squared is fantastic. That's where we end up being with the Squire of Gothos, and we kind of set up.
I like that idea.
Yeah, that they're kind of related. In fact, Q is his godfather. So that's established in novels. So you find that the novels play a role in some of my picks as we go on here. But that's another reason why my appreciation for Q increases. Novelizations always, or original novels always give you a little bit better insight to the other characters.
And I'm able to see that he's apparently in 3 episodes of Voyager, and I only remember one of them, but that has probably a lot more to do with what I felt about Voyager than about Q.
Well, in one of the later Voyager novels that take place after the series ends, Q has a son, and the son ends up sacrificing himself, inspired by Catherine Janeway, and Q is makes her a sworn enemy of his. So,
wow,
interesting to see somebody in the Federation that Q does not like.
Hmm.
Michael B. in the chat says he always enjoyed the Q episodes. They were always fun. You got the sense that the cast and crew thought that they were fun because, it was maybe not quite one a year, but I think there was one a year. In the chat, Starger says 20 episodes for Q, which between all the shows, he might be right, actually.
Yeah.
Especially now that we're seeing that there were 3 on Voyager.
I enjoyed it more in Next Generation, and even Voyager. His Deep Space Nine appearance, I felt like that was just because, hey, we could throw Q in here as a cool character.
And I just don't remember it working, you know. And I, again, it's probably my bias against Q. But you also feel like, with Deep Space Nine, it did not work as well.
Yeah.
I'm convinced we have to revisit Q at some point. We'll do a Q series at some point.
That'll help because I'm like, nope, haven't seen that.
Haven't seen them. Yeah. Well, I think no matter what, we should definitely do an episode that is the aforementioned Encounter at Farpoint, the first episode of Next Generation, because it's there's a lot to say about it, really. They're not even close to finding their sea legs at that point. They're just like, hey, we have a Star Trek show on the air, so watch it, because it might go away if you don't.
Will Riker without a beard is a scary looking thing.
I break out into hives when I see it. All right, so Carrie, you're number 2.
I went with Saru.
From Discovery!
From Discovery!
Love Lieutenant Saru.
I thought Saru was a very interesting character, and I think I also probably liked him also because it's Doug Jones. But I think Doug Jones...
What do you know Doug Jones from?
Because
I know he's worked around a lot. Is there something specific, like, oh, I really liked him in X, so... Didn't mean to put you on the spot, sorry.
No, well, he's worked as a creature in a lot of Del Toro films. I also worked on a short film thing with him. So I've met him and worked with him once.
Carrie Lynn's close personal friend, Doug Jones.
Well, one time. I've enjoyed following his career. But I like this character because it had was a nice balance to Michael. And details of like intrinsic. I can't say my words.
Intrinsic.
There we go. Like the little details. Like it was
his little threat gangway. I love that. That was a great aspect of his character. I agree.
And then it was nice for that character to get the mirror universe version. So like we got to see what he would be like if, he was like the servant. And also he grew in terms of like the beginning. I mean, I guess this is more the character rather than the alien, but. The alien itself is...
Well, no, but we're picking our favorite aliens largely based on their character development.
Because he starts out so, just by the book, a little boring.
Very buttoned down, sort of like a character that you've seen on many shows in many different genres.
Yeah. And so then through the course, he learns to break the rules, learns to do some changes, and then by the end, you're like, yeah, you could take command. And that even goes against, his DNA, literally, because it's like, yeah, you're a species that's made to die, essentially. So I thought that was very fun to watch his progression.
And I would say, for me, far and away, Lieutenant Saru was my favorite character on Discovery. There's a part of me that, of course, liked Cadet Tilly. But that was just more that because I disliked her so much when it started and I was convinced she was going to die, she really won me over. I think that they both had some great growth over the course of the season. But he is the character that, especially really What did it was the episode that was mostly about him. The fact that we got that episode, you know, where they're on the planet and, mm-hmm. you know, he sees the universe and all that, and then he tries to basically sabotage everything. Sabotage everything. and he was hands down my favorite, and he's the character I'm most interested in getting to know more in season two of Discovery. What about you, Frank? Were you surprised that, you know, based on your impression of the Saru character and the pilot for Discovery, by the end of the season, were you impressed with the arc that he took?
Yeah, it's I feel like anytime you put your lead characters in alien makeup, that is going to go draw you towards that person, and you hope that the character's interesting enough to warrant that continued kind of close focus. And Saru was somebody that initially I was like, all right. I mean, the makeup's cool. But I don't know about the character, but he did win me over by the end of it. And I feel like, I would probably say out of everybody, I mean, Burnham had, I mean, the focus was, it was Burnham's journey throughout the season. But I feel like Saru had the biggest noticeable change.
Right. And the problem with Burnham is that she got so much screen time that I was a little burnt out on Burnham by the end, in all honesty. I think it made sense that that's the character that drove the show in season one. But, you know, look, there are plenty of instances of series where you start off where, you know, focused on someone else, and then, you know, you pay attention to someone else maybe in the next season. So, you know, she doesn't even have to be in it that much less, but let's just share the wealth a little bit more.
Yeah.
Let's get a little bit more Saru. Let's see what's happening. For me, my number two choice, see, we're talking a lot about characters that we really get to know, and I chose Worf, son of Moog, from the Klingon House of Martok. Thank you very much. And yes, I had to look to make sure I got them right. I didn't want to mix them up. I had them in my head, and if I hadn't looked, I actually would have said them wrong. So anyway, I would have said House of Moog. Moog synthesizer. I made myself laugh. Anyway, but we got to know him so well for the course of 12 years, because he was on Next Generation, and then he managed to transition over to Deep Space Nine. And as we've talked about on the show before, he only took the gig on Deep Space Nine, insisting that they put him in the movies for Next Generation, which I thought was great, because he's a great part of the movies, you know. You know, we see him convinced that today is a good day to die, in fact, at one point. And the last possible seconds, like, hey, the Enterprise wants to know if you can help. I mean, if they can help. And, of course, my favorite, which we've also talked about on the show, but it's always worth mentioning, I believe, was Nemesis, where Picard says, Mr. Worf, what are you doing here? Oh, it's a really funny story. And they tell the story off camera, and they don't actually explain why he's there. Because it's like, you know what? Do you really care? I mean, in Star Trek, usually we do. But I was just like, I'm just so glad Worf's in the movie. but anyway, we really, and you want to talk about the growth of a character. I mean, I think it was a big part, the growth of the series, where he, you know, he was a science officer in the first season, not security, which is certainly what makes sense. But the idea that a Klingon was not only in Starfleet, but basically, you know, on the bridge of their prime vessel, was to show you, like, oh, see how much happens in between the original series and this one. That was one of the most gripping things about it right away. It's like, oh yeah, we got a Klingon. And, you know, that could have just been a gimmick. But I felt like we got to know him so well. You know, we get to meet his son. Mm-hmm. And we also get, he gets married to Jadzia Dax on Deep Space Nine, and then has to deal with the fact that suddenly it's Ezri Dax and he's not married. But they managed to have him, and much as they did with Mr. Spock, to stay consistent with the character, but figure out a way to also have him be funny. And I think sometimes a show can struggle with a character like that. Like Data in Generations, when he has the emotion chip and he just gets a little too silly. That's too much. Worf, I feel like we just got to know him so well, and he is part of Starfleet, but he's still very, very proud of the Klingon tradition. You know, he's not somebody who's turned their nose at it. I mean, really, if you think about it, he's a lot like Spock in that way. Spock is half human, but he is, of course, in no way shunning his Vulcan lineage, except for sort of the retcon from Discovery about, you know, how he could have gone to the Vulcan Academy, but then he chose Starfleet. So I guess in that sense. But I don't know. Let me so, Kara, you seem familiar with Worf because...
Yeah, I watched some of...
Was Next Generation was primarily... I mean, he was that on... He was on that and Deep Space Nine, but he was on Next Generation from the beginning, Deep Space Nine, the last few seasons.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you at all what episodes I saw, but I know I saw ones here and there with him, and I think I saw one... Is there more than one where you meet his kid?
Was a regular one.
Yeah, I remember seeing his kid. I thought it was... Without knowing much about it beforehand, I was... I liked that, it's a Klingon in the group, and you're like, what? And he's actually intelligent, because normally most of the Klingons, they just do them as so stupid, which is... almost kind of boring to make your whole this whole species like dumb.
Yeah, because they're so focused on the violence and
but I will say there, if it was a Worf-centric episode, you got to really see him get a chance to shine and showcase his backstory and his culture. But if he was just kind of just in the background heading to the security station, his first impulse would always be like, let's attack, let's do this.
And that's true.
And he's always kind of belittled, like, no, Mr. Worf, no, we're not going to do that, Mr. Worf, no.
Can't always attack everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a great point.
Or at least he's, like, eloquent when he talks, because, like, so many of the other portrayals, and now watching more, like, Klingons are just so...
A great example is sort of the I'm not great with episode titles of Next Generation, but Frank, you'll know the one I'm talking about, sort of the exchange program episode where Riker is on the Klingon Bird of Prey.
Yeah.
And we get to see all the Klingon. That's, of course, a very funny episode. It's also just a great story, but that is sort of more typical for what you see of your Klingons. They're a little bit more more one note, but having him on the cast and being on the show, we really got to know him. And for a brief second I thought about ranking him higher than number two, but I was just like, no, he's definitely my second favorite.
When you think of Worf and you look at him up here on the photo that we have here, is just kind of with the relaxed bozo look. Do you like him with this or do you like him with the ponytail? I like the ponytail guy.
I do like the ponytail. It's funny. So we're all in agreement on that. Yeah, I definitely like that look.
Ponytail almost feels more warrior-esque, which works with the clan. This just feels like a bad wig. it doesn't look like real, like that's a normal male haircut. And even for lady haircuts, not a lady, but lady haircut. But the ponytail, I'm like, it's a warrior. You grow out your hair and,
Michael B. in the chat says that he loved Worf. He loved the unintentional humor we got from his character. And yes, I think we got to really see plenty of that. And, you know, I feel like he's finally given up on it, but for years Michael Dorn was trying to pitch this Captain Worf show that he really wanted there to be, and I was like, great, I want that. But I think that they were just like, nope, we're going to have no Star Trek series instead.
That's
and
a shame.
All those years, but he was ready to do it. And I don't know, I mean, here's the thing. Maybe we could see him at some point. Just if they ever decide to do a show that's set in this point, this fixed point that we don't think we're ever going to get, or at least I don't think we're ever going to get. He's another character that you could get because, I don't know, what's the average lifespan of a Klingon? I don't actually know the answer, but it's longer than us.
Yeah.
You know?
But given that the first season of Discovery was so focused on Klingons as well, I feel like anything that I learned in the first season of Discovery pales to the enjoyment I got out of any of the Klingon culture that I learned about in Next Generation.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Where did Mr. Worf sit for you in terms of the crew on Next Generation? Was he amongst your favorites, or was he... Or are you anti-Klingon? You put all the humans first.
That's right. That's right, man. Humanoid pride first. That's right. I'd probably, for me, I'd probably rank it Picard, Data. I could see either Worf. I'm always a sucker for Geordi too. So
I do love Geordi. Yeah. See, it's tough. Yeah. See, that's the thing. Well, there you go. Well, rank everybody in that next generation. We will move on to our honorable mentions. And Frank, I'm fascinated by this choice because I don't know anything about this choice.
So, man.
I'm going to sit back and let you tell me everything I need to know.
Good old Mackenzie Calhoun, created by Peter David for the novels that he did for the USS Excalibur series. So Mackenzie Calhoun, he grew up on the planet Xenix. And what's interesting is that Peter David also did this one, another novel called Rocket Hard Place, where he introduced this character called Stone. And both that was a predecessor to this, and people said, like, wait, is this just like your second chance at doing that character again? And Peter David said no, that they were kind of both inspired by Mel Gibson, but from different portrayals.
Hmm.
And while Stone was more of like the Riggs in Lethal Weapon.
Oh, his, okay.
Yes.
Sure.
This was kind of more of a William Wallace character. It. Yes. So wow. He was a person that at a young age.
Two Mel Gibson references. That's interesting. Right. So neither one of them liked Jews. Anyway, don't answer that. Don't answer that.
He led a rebellion at a young age, kind of overthrowing the people that are enslaving his people.
Wow.
And caught the eye of Picard. What I like about it is a nice touchstones with some of the other popular Star Trek lore. So caught the attention of Picard, who helped usher him through Starfleet Academy. Eventually, he got while people thought he got kicked out of the fleet, he really was taken undercover.
I like that.
Yes, and then eventually thought he was going too deep, so they pulled him out and put him on the Excalibur.
So has it been quite some time since there's been a new story with Captain McKenzie? Or?
Yeah, I mean, they've done some comic book stuff recently, but and recently, I mean, probably like the last 3 or 4 years.
Okay, well, that's recently enough, sure. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, Peter David has a history in these novels. I believe, didn't he write when there's a couple of crossover Star Trek X-Men novels?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's the original cast with like the original X-Men,
yep.
And then the Next Generation with the all-new, all-different X-Men, and I felt like he did both of those. And I'm familiar with Peter David going way back. He wrote on Spectacular Spider-Man in like the mid-80s, and then I think he's like, well, I make a little bit more money if I write novels, I guess. But yeah, so I was excited to see this choice, and this is another one of those things where he's like, man, I'd love to read some of these, but I don't know when I'd find the time.
It's cool. There's a lot of touchstones. Robin Loeffler, who was in an episode of Next Generation, played by good old Ashley Judd. She's a member of his crew. Elizabeth Shelby, who was in Best of Both Worlds.
Okay.
Yeah, that kind of like the board consultant ends up, they met in the academy, engaged, broke apart, then reunited. She was his first officer there.
Hmm.
And then eventually they fell back in love again.
Man, this is right. Like getting an update on General Hospital.
There you go. Edward Jellicoe. thought he was like a new version of Kirk, which he actually, Calhoun took as a compliment because he's like, he really looked up to Kirk and his calculated.
I would take that as a compliment.
Yes.
Carrie, your honorable mention.
Not from the shows, but from the movie Roiland. I was looking at like best Star Trek. I'm like, yes! I love this guy.
I wish we got to know him better. Oh. I think he's so great with Simon Pegg, and he doesn't talk that much, but it's perfect. The two of them together. This was another one of those ones when I saw the choice. I'm like, I didn't even think of
him. This was my choice, and I love how excited
you're. I'm saying I'm so excited that you picked it. I'll let you talk about your choice, but I was like, yes.
No, I love that you were excited about it too. Yeah, because I was like, oh wait, I was looking up characters that refreshed my memory. I saw this bitch. I was like, absolutely love this character. He doesn't even have a huge part in the movies, but he's just so funny. And yeah, he barely talks, but him and Simon Pegg are just so good together. And I like the like how they made this alien look, because it's actually kind of cute and funky looking at the same time. So that's always fun too, because the aliens, when they look kind of too humanoid, it's like, meh.
Yeah.
But this, you're like, okay, that looks like a critter. I mean, I know it's bipedal and has like two arms, but you know, anyway, I just love this character because you instantly like. Actually, I was gonna say, do we know it's a him too?
I feel like he's referred. Scotty's referred to him as a him. I might be wrong, but I feel pretty confident. Yeah.
Yeah, you just instantly like him, and he's it's kind of a testament to the character that you. I think everybody's like, yes, that guy.
Yeah, and I just like when, you know, Scotty is sort of, you know, marooned and like off in Siberia, and it's like just the two of them, you know. I'm like, where's that novel? Where's that comic book series? Just the two of them together. My honorable mention goes to my favorite episode. For anybody who watches the show knows that, watches this show, not anybody who watches Star Trek, that the Tribbles are my favorite episode of the original series. And also, Trial Trials and Tribulations would be my favorite episode of Next Generation, and More Tribbles, More Troubles would be my favorite episode of the animated series, but that's not saying much. And here we see in the infamous scene with Captain Kirk, I don't know, there's something about them, they just make me happy. I love the Tribbles, and they're probably the best toy tie-in with Star Trek, is the little Tribbles that purr.
Wasn't that kind of the power they had, is they made you happy?
Yeah, they make you happy, except for Klingons. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the best part of this picture is just the fact that you can, in this scene, you see Shatner get so mad that they keep throwing Tribbles at him.
But you really know that it's the Deep Space Nine crew doing that to him.
I know, I've thought about it. It's very self-indulgent, but I want to do an episode where we rewatch that one and the animated series. I'm like, boy, it's a lot of Tribbles. But one day, our number one is coming right up. But first, want to have fun, learn, and grow in all areas of your life? For those who do, have we got the podcast for you. Conversations with Maria Menounos Podcast Edition is hosted by our AfterBuzz TV founder and drops every Friday on iTunes. Conversations with Maria Menounos features celebrity and influencer interviews, along with secrets and tips on how to be better in all aspects of life. From health and wellness to career, relationships, finances, and more, let our Maria be the big sister you've always wanted. Just go to iTunes and subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos for free. Be sure to rate and comment, and when you do, let Maria know it was us who sent you there. That's right. Tell her Star Trek Weekly sent you there. Conversations with Maria Menounos, Podcast Edition. Check it out. Well, without any further ado, not entirely surprising, all three of us, we chose as our favorite alien, Mr. Spock. And Frank, we'll continue the trend. I'll let you go first, talk a little bit why he's your favorite, and Carrie and I will do the same.
I will just say that how can you not watch Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan and have the ending of that film come and not be just completely sucked into Spock at that point?
I was six when I saw it in the movie theater. I was traumatized. I was very upset that Mr. Spock... well, part three is called Search for Spock for a reason.
Yes. Certainly you get to see him in the original film, you got to see him in the TV series, but there's just something about that story that just really just locks it all in. That it just... Made Spock my go-to. I was like, man, this is a character that's just really locked in to me. So,
right. And for those watching on YouTube, we have an image that has both Leonard Nimoy and Zachary Quinto. I feel like it's important to have both because they're both great. You know, I would say they're my favorite part of both iterations, both crews. I like both Spocks. If I got to pick a Spock, I'm going to go with Leonard, obviously. But I think they're both great. Carrie.
Yeah, casting for a young Spock, I was like... Absolutely. Like, it's so spot on. And I go, yeah, I could believe that's younger Spock. I started probably more watching the younger version, and it's kind of fun in a reversal. Like, seeing the new movies and then watching the show, you appreciate the show even more because you're like, they did such a good job, like, picking people and making it spot on. Anyway, I think Spock's so great because we get to really know him, and he's such a comedic character without really trying to be like, haha, I'm funny, because it's his reactions to us being human beings that's generally pretty funny. His, like, one-liners, his raised eyebrow, I don't know if they really set out, like, we need to make this guy comical. But it just comes off so well, and it's just fun to watch.
Yeah, as we talked about when we looked at the Mud episodes, the fact that you just got his banter with Bones was great week in, week out. And he is a very funny comedic character in the series, and one of the great reasons why Star Trek IV is so good is because of the humor that he brings to it, because he's a little bit out of it. He's a little disoriented being essentially reborn, and just the talk of the colorful metaphors and double dumbass on you. He just has, there's so, like, if you take all of his lines from Star Trek IV, I'm going to say like 80% of them are funny and not in a way where it detracts from the movie. So he is, you know, of all the souls I've known in this unit, his is the most human. But no, the human part of him, I think, helps. But just, you know, just this serious button-down Vulcan managed to be such a fun and funny character. And, you know, this was a no-brainer. We had to pick Mr. Spock, I think.
His bit with Shatner just in the truck is that they're asked if they like Italian food in Star Trek IV.
Yes.
Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes.
Yes, no, yes, no.
Yeah, yes, yeah. We like Italian food, and so do you.
And then they try too hard in Star Trek V, but that's for another time.
It's only a small part, but I liked in seeing the new movies, and then they have it a tiny bit in the show, how Uhura has a thing for him, and I like that.
I find that very interesting.
I like that. Yeah, it's so great.
That took some getting used to when I saw the 2009 Star Trek.
But if you
no, go, it's great. It's just
no,
I was
in
like,
the old show, there's a little bit of that there, only a tiny bit. There's like one episode where she's like, "Hey there," and like touches his shoulder, you know, kind of flirts with him. And I was like, "Oh, that's great. That's perfect," because that's like the movie. But they don't have much more of it later.
Anyway, thanks so much for everybody who joined us in the chat. Mm-hmm. We really appreciate all of you who joined us, and we hope you enjoyed hearing us rank all of these. Please comment, let us know, and next week. We're going to do it. We're going to dive in to Star Trek The Motion Picture. So rewatch it beforehand. We will see you next week. Until then, I'm Christian Blatt at ChristianDMZ. Carrie, where do people find you?
Yeah, you guys can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's KARIDLANE.
And Frank, where do people find you?
Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie.
See you next Sunday. Live long and prosper.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.